Everyone has a story. Everyone travels a road. Some of those roads are paved, some are gravel, some are a combination. Some are superhighways. Some of us have met with sharp turns, intersections, and delays. We travel at different speeds to different destinations. On this podcast, we talk about your road to now. Welcome to Your Road to Now. Today I sit down with Jennifer Grant. And I'm joined today with Alexa Anderson. She's going to co-host with me. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Alexa and Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're glad you're here on, isn't it Women's Week today?
It's Women's Week.
Or this week, not today.
Yes.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Why don't you start off and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
How far back would you like me to go?
Well, let's start where you're born and like do it real quick.
Okay, I'll give
like
you
an hour or less.
Nutshell version. So I was born in northern Quebec, grew up in northern Ontario, very northern.
You were saying earlier James Bay?
James Bay. Where's tip of James Bay.
Polar bears are?
Moosonee, Ontario. Polar bears, wolves, white whales.
So yeah. You have to kind of like, how do you get in there? You have to get in there by train or fly.
And during my high school years, I went to high school in North Bay, Ontario, boarding school. I used to be a tour guide in Moosonee in the summer months. And our vessel was a big freighter canoe. And wow. I would sit at the back with a megaphone as we went out into James Bay.
Into the ice floes.
It's very cool.
How old were you when you were doing that?
13.
13 and you were doing tours.
Yes, tours, yeah. And one time, well, we...
Polar bears out there?
No, we graduated from freighter canoes to this big diesel boat, which was such a big deal when we got the new boat. But we actually got probably 100 kilometers up into the bay and we ran out of diesel fuel.
Oh, wow.
So we had a major response and a recovery and helicopters and...
The tourists loved it.
I think I was probably 15 then.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lots of tourists up there, though, too, for the...
Well, lots of tourists used to come in. It was called the Polar Bear Express, and it operated in the summer months, so they would come up there. So there was Moosonee and the Moose River, and then Moose Factory was across the way.
Wow. What's the population of James Bay then, I guess?
So when I lived there, it was probably not more than 2,500 in... both communities. So it was bigger in forestry. My father worked for the Hudson Bay Company. So yeah, just
350 years of history there, Hudson Bay Company. I think they celebrate 350 years this year.
Yeah, my dad was with the Bay for a long time.
And a lot of people don't realize that the Hudson Bay owns a ton of things other than just stores, right? They own a lot of the railroads and a lot of property.
We have a lot of Hudson Bay artifacts in our house.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
So how long were you there? When did you graduate there?
So I graduated in North Bay, went to college in North Bay, and took hotel resort management. My first job was in New Brunswick at the Algonquin Hotel. Beautiful big hotel.
Yeah, that's a pretty famous place, too, no?
It was, Passamaquoddy Bay, so it was beautiful. And then I went from there... did a couple of hotel properties in Ontario, moved out to Banff, worked in Banff, worked in Lake Louise, worked in Calgary.
So that was working for some of the hotel properties?
Working for some of the hotel and tour companies. And then I ended up in Vernon in 1978. I was a travel agent then. Worked there for a couple of years. Thought the Okanagan Valley was just... beautiful.
And you were in some pretty picturesque places before that.
I was, yeah, exactly. So this was like a whole new world for me. And then the airlines were hiring in 1979, so it was CP Air. So I decided right away I need to work for the airlines.
So what was your role with the airlines?
So I took the customer service training, so on the ground position, and it was kind of funny, but how they based our placement after the course was over was based on our marks. And I didn't know a whole lot about BC at the time, but I had heard a lot about Whitehorse. So I thought, I want to go to Whitehorse.
So for most, for people listening, though, CP Air, wasn't that Canadian Airlines?
Yes.
Canadian Airlines before they were taken over by Air Canada.
Correct. Yes.
Because there used to be two big airlines in Canada.
Yes, it was the big orange plane.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So One person in the class beat me out by 1%. I think he got 98%. I still remember his name, Ken Patton. He got to go to Whitehorse, and I didn't know where to go.
So you have to let that go now.
We're not letting that go.
I don't know if I can, actually. I'd love to meet him again. Like 40 years later.
Is it Ken?
Ken. Yeah,
if you're ever listening to this,
yeah.
Jennifer's got something to
say. Exactly,
there.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Yeah, move over, Ken. I'm coming back. Yeah, so somebody said, well, there were a bunch of names in the hat, so I pulled out Fort Nelson, and I had no idea where Fort Nelson was, and got on the aircraft in my little, it was November, but I'm in my Navy suit, Navy pumps, all airline, you know.
You're wearing the gear.
Turned out, and yeah, landed in Fort Nelson in a snowstorm, and it was like minus 20. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing here? And then the shuttle bus to downtown Fort Nelson was a big old yellow school bus. And all the windows were like halfway down. And so
So they could keep the frost out.
I guess so. I don't know what that was all about.
No, that's just school buses.
Yeah. No, it was
they don't work in any of those
windows.
It was windows.
Like brutal. So yeah, I got off downtown Fort Nelson. And that's where I started my airline career.
So you were working CSR and kind of the front lines, kind of?
Front lines.
Yeah.
It was busy then. It was oil and gas boom. So we had four 737s operating.
So for a lot of people that don't know where Fort Nelson is,
so
Fort
St. John, northeastern BC, going north, it's Watson Lake and Whitehorse. So
big oil community, big natural gas community.
Natural gas.
For sure.
Yep. Yeah. And oil.
And that's part of BC that has those types of resources.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah. Beautiful area, though.
It is a beautiful
area.
It's
kind of like the Peace River region.
It is.
Yeah.
Very much like that. Yeah. There are lots of, you know, in Nahanni National Park. It was a good place
to see the Northern Lights.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yep. It was a good place to raise family.
So how long were you there?
15 years. I met my husband at the curling rink.
Cute.
Of course.
I asked him if he would buy me a drink on Friday night.
You asked him?
I'd had probably a couple of cocktails before I ran into him. He was friends with one of the guys that I worked with at the airport. Mm. And so I thought, oh, okay. So anyway, he bought me a drink. And then a year later, we actually got married on CPR. So it was
on the plane.
On the plane.
Wow.
So it was a commercial flight going between Fort Nelson and Watson Lake.
Yeah.
And we had to wait until we were 27,000 feet to make it legal, because then we were in Yukon airspace. So the inside of the aircraft, I guess the crew had decorated it before it arrived in Fort Nelson. They had bouquets on the overhead bins, and they decorated the galley arch.
Wow.
And we had a Supreme Court justice from Whitehorse marry us, and we landed in Watson Lake, which was the turnaround point, and we looked out the window, and like there was people everywhere, but they were all dressed up in Klondike costumes because they heard there was a wedding on board. So like the mayor was there and you know all the town forefathers. So we got off, went into the little log building, had some cheers, got back on the plane, had at the time what they were serving was called a picnic in the sky. So it was all, you know, they still had china and everything on the aircraft. Got back to Fort Nelson.
When you could actually have utensils.
Yeah. Utensils, yes, real utensils. Not
flying
not
sounds
plastic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Ben. China? Utensils?
It was awesome, yeah.
That's a tough wedding to top for sure.
Wow, I've never
heard anyone. Supposedly we made aviation history. Like I still have the photos and the newspapers and they're all yellow and crinkled. But
it's a different Mile High Club, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit. My parents were on board, Jim.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool.
That's
did they share that too?
My parents?
No, the CP. Did they share?
CP. Yes.
Did they share the mile?
Yeah. Yikes. They went all out.
Awesome. That's
great. There was a red carpet on the runway, and we borrowed somebody's town car, and it was fun.
Where'd you honeymoon?
Las Vegas.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a cool wedding story.
Yeah, it was fun.
So you stayed there for how long?
15 years.
The marriage ended at the same time?
Yeah.
Is that sensitive? Should I say that?
When we got married, we actually said that. I wonder if this will last for, 6 months. And so it's been 37 years. And I always say whatever that song is, like, we just got married in a fever, All we did was party and work. But it was
whirlwind great. Romance.
Whirlwind romance. So, 15 years there, and then the airlines were... So I worked for CP Air there, and then I took a leave of absence and opened up a travel agency just for something to do. Did really well with that, and then went back to the airlines. CP Air pulled out, and Time Air from Lethbridge took over the route. And the town was in quite an upcry because of losing the 737 service. So I thought, okay, this is my chance to be the sort of liaison or the bridge between the community and the airline. So I applied, got the job, kept working there. Eventually they added on, I looked after Fort Nelson, Watson Lake. They added on Fort St. John. I did a little time in Grand Prairie. So
people always say when they do North, they say, I did some time.
Did some time. That's right. Because
I did time in High Level. Yeah. I did time in Thompson, Manitoba.
So you know what I'm talking about.
For sure.
Yeah.
Only if you live there do you understand.
Yeah.
I did time.
Yeah.
You feel like you're in prison?
Jail.
Yeah, did some time for sure. So.
So then CP was acquired by Air Canada at some point. Oh, they went, whatever they amalgamated, merged, or whatever, acquired them.
Yeah.
Was that when you kind of left that, or?
Well, it changed. So I left, it was still Time Air that then turned into Canadian Regional. So when we decided that we wanted to leave the North. By then we had two kids, so we were, thinking about education and all the rest. And so the Kelowna position opened up for manager, and I thought, I'd remembered living in Vernon, so I thought Kelowna would be wonderful. So I did a little bit of an advance, kind of a covert mission. I came down, didn't tell anybody I was here, just sort of checked how things seemed to be working, and I thought, this looks like a good opportunity for me. So I applied, got the job. So we moved here in 1995. Then it did change to Canadian Regional, and then after that it changed to Air Canada Jazz, and then following that it was Jazz Aviation. So during my 27 years in the airline business, when I started in Kelowna, they added on Kamloops, Penticton, Castlegar. Yeah. And so I looked after those airports, and then for a little while looked after, I don't know, a few other ones like Abbotsford when, Air Canada went in.
So
there
you just got some BC aviation history.
Yes,
there.
Quite a
all through Jennifer.
Quite a bit. Yeah. So. Yeah.
That's amazing. And so you ended up here.
I did.
And then after the airline stint.
So after the airline, so I decided to leave in 2015. So I was turning 60, and I thought,
you don't look a day over like 30.
Oh, Jim.
Wow.
Wow. It's a good thing.
Well, you're probably in better shape than you were probably when you were 30.
You know what? I am.
Yeah.
For sure.
You do look great.
Oh, thank you. So, what was I saying? You just got me so...
so flushed.
Yeah, so you were saying that you left the airline industry in 2015.
2015. Thanks for bringing me back.
That's okay.
So, yes, I thought it's time to leave. I wanted to leave on a high note, which I did. I was starting to experience burnout, which I didn't really know until a couple of years later. I was pushing myself beyond any reasonable limit. I had 150 employees. I don't know, 40 contract personnel. It was a 24/7
job.
You're
kind of a type A personality, though, like high achiever.
High achiever.
Yeah,
nobody
so push
could,
yourself always.
Yeah, couldn't do it without me. So, I was lucky that they didn't take me out on a stretcher, really.
Mm-hmm.
It was scary. So rather than take a couple of months off to recover and rejuvenate and you know, restore, I decided that I was going to open up a business because the best was yet to come. And so I launched my business in November 2015.
And what's the name of the business?
So the first name was JLT Image Consulting. So the first thing I did was to get...
JLT meaning Jennifer...
Leach Trask.
There you go.
I decided to train as an image consultant. So I got that certification through the International Institute in Toronto. Put up my first website, and it was primarily image consulting, but I was a little bit more of a generalist at the time. I had more than 30 years of leadership experience. So I was thinking in my mind, you know, I can do all of these things for so many people, for business leaders. I can help them to up their game. I can help people with their image. I can do it all. But when I look back, I think it might have been a little bit confusing for people. I got a lot of people who, when I would say I'm an image consultant, they were thinking strictly in terms of I dress people and I style
like a
people.
Stylist.
You know, a personal stylist, which I've done. Mm-hmm. I enjoy doing, but really for me, that's kind of the least that mm-hmm. I wanted to do. I wanted to do other things to help people to be more successful.
More about their brand.
How they present themselves and first impressions and all of the mm-hmm. rest of it. So over the next couple of years...
So a lot of educating people, which is a tough slug when you get into new business.
It was.
Because we did the same thing, right? So when we started doing websites, we were educating people like, oh, you need a website. And they're just like, I don't think that's going to stick around. Like that's.
Whenever I would say to somebody, I'm an image consultant, they'd go, well, geez, my buddy could sure use you. You know, it was never them,
for sure.
Right? So the first couple of years were definitely roller coaster.
Most businesses are, though, for sure. Yeah. Like, it's a tough slug because, and I think most people, I guess, go into business thinking that it's going to be all, like...
Easy.
And some people get struck by lightning, for sure, and they, you know, they get lucky, but lots of times it's hard work, and that's why they say most businesses, if they can make it past 5 years, you'll probably find some success.
Yeah.
Because lots of them burn out in a year, 2 years.
Oh, for sure.
Like that, right?
So. Well,
And there's no stress like a business owner.
Oh.
Right? there's no such thing because there's nobody to look to, right? Hey, who's going to pay this? Oh, no, that'll be you.
Well, and even, exactly, and it's even hard to ask for help. I remember thinking that I don't want anybody to know that I don't know what I'm doing and that I'm, you know, financially, you know, going to go bankrupt here. So, yeah, so it was hectic.
For a high achiever, pride's a tough one.
It was.
Yeah,
it was.
Sure.
I became unwell in my third year, extremely unwell. I think it was a combination of, you know, the previous 20 years were starting to catch up because I was pushing even harder than what I did in all those years when I started my business. And I felt like I had a lot of things at stake instead of going whatever route you can go when you start your business to get some investments, to maybe look at a partner, however you're going to mm-hmm. fund your business. I decided that I was going to do it on my retirement savings. Mm-hmm. And looking back now, that wasn't such a good idea because I literally burned through my retirement mm-hmm. savings that I worked so hard for all of those years, like within my first 2 years of my business. So. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, I took a little bit of a turn in the third year, and I'll share something personal with you before you get the chance to ask me something personal.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, no, it is for sure.
Okay. So when I got sick, it was in December, and it was just like something out of the blue. So keeping in mind that for all of the, you know, 60-some years prior, I'd always been energetic, optimistic, outgoing, just wanting to, you know, be the best I could be. And then in that December, I couldn't get out of bed. I was weeping all day for about 5 days and realized that something was definitely not right. My husband took me to the doctor, and they diagnosed me with clinical depression because I had definitely all the signs. Like, it was just literally like my life had changed overnight. So I continued to be very ill for a number of months. And in late March, I think it was late March, I was further diagnosed with late onset bipolar disorder.
Wow.
And so I thought then that my life was over. Everything that I knew was just such a, it was just so confusing, and I was so overwhelmed and finding it hard to come to terms with having a mental illness, and a serious mental illness. So that was an especially difficult time, but I ended up, through support and professional assistance and my family, ended up getting well. There's a story inside of a story about getting well, but I ended up, I guess by that October, so it went from December until the following October, and there were periods during that time where I couldn't read, I couldn't write, I couldn't speak. I mean, if I went to speak, I was speaking in a whisper. I was isolating.
Couldn't find your voice.
Couldn't find my voice. I couldn't leave our house. I lost pretty much all of my social network and my professional network. But a couple of things that I did keep on doing, I've always been a longtime swimmer and like to work out. So I was able to, most days, to get to the pool to swim. The only way I could swim would be to count from 1 to 100 over and over and over again to prevent any other sort of thoughts. Mm-hmm.
Those are center point then.
Yeah, blackness sort of coming in. So I would do that, and then I would just leave the pool. And same thing with working out in the gym. And I remember one day I was sitting in the gym on one piece of equipment, and I thought, I feel vacant, and I feel like my mouth is open. And then I realized that I'd seen other people in the gym that looked just like that. And I thought, I'm one of those people. I just, you know, can barely function anyway. I got better in September or October, and I was able to resume my business. And I had a lot of, you know, advice and counsel about whether I would ever disclose my illness, considering that I had a business and what people's impression might be. And I decided fairly early on that I, first of all, wasn't going to let my mental illness define me. I felt very hopeful about my future, and I still do. And it's never happened so far. I mean, I don't tell everybody I meet on the street that I'm bipolar, but I figured if someone might not want to do business with me for that reason, then that's fine with me. So I've become, over the last year or so, a strong advocate for mental health in the community. And I'm also speaking more now on mental health. I'm hoping that I can be an example to other women or anybody that might be suffering, and that it's possible to have a productive, successful life even in the midst of mental illness. So that's the other part of my story.
Thanks for sharing that.
That's amazing.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
So I think that it's kind of a couple things that, while I was listening, And I've done a couple podcasts with people too. It's kind of weird how what they were doing when they were really young is kind of where they find themselves. Mm-hmm. You were a guide as a 13-year-old. And really what you want to do is help guide people now, whether that's through personal branding, I'll call it, or whatever, or guide them through something if they're going through some trouble and speak to people and let them know that it's okay. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's kind of cool, right? That you kind of find where you started. And personal branding is kind of really becoming in vogue. I guess people call it personal branding. You can call it reputation for people that think it's too vain, but reputation, it's all about reputation. And I think that the way you carry yourself, the way you speak, and fashion, obviously, and I believe in the fashion, food, fitness kind of model too. And obviously, and I find that a lot of people, when they're finding themselves again, that fitness plays a big role because it's something you get to control.
Yeah.
Like it's all within you. Like you're not depending on somebody else. So it's something you can easily control because in business, you're kind of at the mercy of other people a little bit because whether or not they want to hire you or not. But in your own fitness, you get to control if you go to the gym or what results you get, and you look great. I mean, you look amazing for you're saying you said you're past 60.
64.
Like you probably, I mean, Alexa can tell me, like, I mean, you're probably in better shape than most 20-year-olds.
Well, I feel.
Hey, come over here.
No,
you are better. She is in better shape than me, and I'm 27.
Well, the fitness part, I had the same approach to fitness as I did with everything else. So when I moved to Kelowna, I was smoking a pack and a half of cigarettes a day, working around the clock. Mm-hmm. I lived
smoking
at the Capri Hotel.
Was acceptable at the day, though. Right?
Yes.
Everybody smoked.
It was
It
was my reward for, you know, putting in like a 15-hour day. But the first thing that I noticed in Kelowna was I thought, geez, all these people are out here running and riding bikes, and here I am like puffing away on a cigarette. So I think it was the next year I decided, okay, I'm going to have one foot in the ground if I don't smarten up, because I was prone to bronchitis. So I started running at night when nobody could see me, and I'd run between telephone poles, and then I joined the running room, and that's when it all started. So I did 5K, 10Ks, half marathons. I was a triathlete for 15
I remember me, like,
years.
The first time I met you was in the pool or something.
Yes,
like that,
it was. Yeah.
I was sitting in the hot tub and you kept walking by.
I know. Yeah. I remember thinking,
and you're looking over me like, why doesn't that guy actually do something?
Who is that couple that's in the hot tub? I kind of figured that you did a workout someplace else and then came to the hot tub. So yeah, I remember seeing you and Nikki there.
That's how you guys met at the pool.
I think so. And then I think I never did learn how to swim. As a youth, I was a river swimmer, keep your head above water kind of thing. And I used to go to the Y in Rutland, and one of the lifeguards there said, because I was always in a hot tub, she's, why don't you come swim? I said, I don't even know how to swim. So she actually took lessons.
Oh, good.
And I learned how to swim. And then she's like, you should do masters. And I'm just like,
No. Right?
Yeah, I didn't do the masters.
Yeah, I still do the masters now. But when I blew my knee out after 15 years of triathlon, because I was obsessed. I mean, it was triathlon.
Is that one of the things that you think is tough for you? Because whatever you do, you want to do it so well, so you kind of get a little obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, there was never.
Wow, you guys sound similar a little bit.
Yeah, there was never.
Thanks, Lex. They're wearing black.
I didn't know that an athlete actually existed in me. But when I started getting out and doing races, and because I was slightly older, I think I started when I was 45, and I did well in all these races, and I thought, this is incredible. And people, what I thought was really strange at first was people would identify with me with the athlete part of me, not the fact that I worked around the clock and was, you know, trying to be the best manager possible for my people. It was like, geez, you did Ironman, or you did, you know, whatever. And that was different for me to be acknowledged or appreciated for doing a sport like that. And so, I mean, that carried me for a long time. It was a selfish sport. Definitely took time away from my family, because all I did was train and work. And then, I did a last big race in Australia, and that was kind of it for my knee. So I had to give up running which was hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I basically, I'd always liked swimming the best, so I threw myself at swimming like unbelievable. So I've done things like one of the swims that I did with four other women was to swim from Seashell to Nanaimo.
Wow.
Across the Georgia Strait.
Did you mm-hmm. do
that? That was like mind-boggling. Yeah. Actually, you know what? It wasn't too bad. It was probably about 18 degrees, but we were in, I don't know what conditions they're called on the ocean, but it's like
swells.
Like when the Coast Guard came out and said, I can't order you off the ocean, but it's not safe to be out here. And we were about halfway to Nanaimo. And we kept going. And there was one time where I jumped off the boat and it was 4 foot swells or whatever. And the support crew on the boat couldn't see me because I was, and they said I look like a little flying fish. They just see me come popping out across
the waves. So what does that feel like when you can actually put your feet in the sand or the rock or whatever? What does that feel like?
It was very, things are all distorted for a bit. Like we were shaky by the time we were done because it was some 14 hours and
swimming.
We climbed up on the rocks just on the shore. Like it wasn't like there was a great big finish line for us, so we just crawled up on these jagged rocks and got there, and we're all teetering. But it's interesting that you asked me that, because when we came back to Kelowna, well, first of all, we stopped in Vancouver, and our son's been in Vancouver for a few years. So I was trying to relay this experience that I'd had, which was, it was like some sort of reawakening. It was like cosmic. It was just so many things happened in that swim, what I saw, what I smelled, what I experienced. And he said to me, he said, "That's really intense, Mom." He said, "A lot of people don't ever get to experience something like that." And I thought, he understands what I'm saying. It was just that surreal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But when I got back to Kelowna, it was the next day. I was driving somewhere and I was on Gordon and I was listing. I was actually in the car driving like this, and I thought, I'm still not right from my equilibrium and stuff like that. So it took a few days to get straightened around, and my head was definitely still in the water. And by then I'd managed to push away, there were things to be fearful about during that swim, a lot of things, but it was sort of days later where I started to think, jeepers, you know what, something could have happened. I could have drowned. We could have come into marine life, that kind of thing. So I thought that that was interesting, that it was, open water swimming is mentally challenging for sure.
So are you doing any more open water swims, or is that enough?
Yeah, no,
you're
going to
do the one in England?
No, because I'd do the channel, but I'm too small. I wouldn't be able to sustain myself with the cold temperature because you can't wear a wetsuit. Mm. So I did another one here from Kelowna to Penticton.
Wow.
With a few friends.
I'm like speechless. That's right,
a tough
here.
Drive. I'm just like, I'm going to drive there.
It was called the fruit swim. We swam from Jaro Beach
to
the
peach.
Wow. And awesome. We started out at 2 o'clock in the morning. We started out by the Kelowna Yacht Club there, and all the people were falling out of the bars. And there we were in our boat, and we swam with lights on our head. It was crazy.
So I don't want to take too long of your day today, but we can probably talk again and again and again.
Yes.
But what's the road ahead look like for Jennifer?
Oh, it's like every day I can hardly wait to get up. I love what I'm doing with my business. Mm-hmm. I formed a new business exclusively for women. It's called Fearless at 50, Fabulous at 60. Hmm. And I'm going to be doing...
Well, you're both of those.
Oh, thank you. So that part's exciting for me. That working in that sort of area feels very much like who I am now. And I want to help other women to gain confidence and be empowered and make their next chapter their best chapter. So I think that's sort of my mantra right now.
It's a great mission, for sure. Yeah,
that's where I'd like to do. And I'm, you know, grateful. I'm very grateful to be well every day. And I'm grateful for my family and my friends. And for support. And you and Nikki have shown me some wonderful support, so I'm grateful to you too.
We got great news for you too, because guess who's coming to town in October?
Who?
The personal branding like guru, Gary Vee.
Oh, I know. I saw that. I know. And that's, I remember Nikki telling me that, I don't know how many years ago. She said it would just be so great to get Gary Vee. And I thought, you guys did it.
Oh, yeah. And also he's great. And Alexa's a big part of Level Up for sure.
Yes, you
and,
are.
Yeah. She's part of that, if you can dream it, you can do it. Right.
So. Oh, I've got a bracelet that says that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I thought I invented that.
Hey, well, maybe you did, and then, you know.
I was going to say, do you help men 50s and the fabulous?
You know what? I actually I put a post out on LinkedIn that just kind of went crazy. And I got a bunch of men going, what about us?
Yeah, because well, I think they need help with the fashion.
To me, fashion's a big thing. I mean, I work on mine all the time. I probably could use some more work, but I think I love the way that you dress and you get ready and all this stuff, because I think it shows the effort that you put into yourself. Mm-hmm. To me, I think that's, it doesn't necessarily, and everybody has different fashion. Yeah. I don't think any fashion is different than any other fashion, but I think whatever you're doing should look like you put some effort into what you do, as opposed to just falling out of bed and grabbing what was laying on the floor.
Exactly. And that's what I say to all my clients. It's not, you don't always have to make whole scale change in your appearance. Mm-hmm. It's the little things. It's the subtleties.
One degree shift.
Yeah. It is. And sometimes that can make all the difference. Mm-hmm. So
for sure.
Let's keep going fashion forward, Jim. And, you know, check in with each other and see how we're doing.
Even her hair has, like, fashion. She's
I think
like
I should
sparkles.
Do that. I love that.
No one can see but
oh,
me.
Oh, my gosh. You guys.
Head to toe. Done.
You've made my month.
What scares you out in the world right now? Is there anything scaring you?
I think I watch too much U.S. politics.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That scares me.
Yeah, I say to people, like, really try to look at what you can control or contribute mm-hmm. to. Because mm-hmm. if you're worrying about who's got their fingers on the nuclear button or this yep. or that, I mean, you're just going to cause yourself too much stress.
Yeah.
Because you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about the whether or not what he tweets or doesn't tweet or what have you, right? Because that's all outside your control.
It's just so past the point. But I think a lot about, I think about my children and grandchild, and I want them to have a good life. And I, you know, I have a bit of a different approach, I think, in my life now as a result of my illness, that I want to make every day count. I want to make it count for me. I want to contribute, but I also want to help really anybody that I come into contact with. So, yeah.
What would you say to, like, you know, 20 or 30 year old you or Alexa, like, in, as she pursues her career? What advice would you say from the travels you've been on? What would you want to impart to her?
That's a good question. I would say believe in yourself. Believe in your instincts.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to sound cliche, but follow your heart. If there's something that you are just drawn to, then act upon that. Things will happen. You're going to have some bumps, and I'm sure you already have. And I remember people telling me that when I was young, like, it'll be okay, you can bounce back. And I thought, no, at the moment it just seemed like the end, it's just the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me now, I'm able to say that things like when I started my business, I didn't know it all, and I did have some failures, mm-hmm. but I'm living proof, I'm still here, I picked myself back up, so keep working on
your fighter.
Resiliency skills, and be a fighter, mm-hmm. but just own it, whatever you're gonna do.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I already feel like I'm a little
she's
fighter.
Feisty. I think our company's definitely trying. I mean, Nikki's been our CEO from day one, and And I believe that we have more females working here than males now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a time for women. And I think, yeah. You know, we've had it for a billion years. I think we've had the reins. It's time to hand them over.
That's one thing. Every time I've walked into your offices, I do feel something special. And it's just from the initial point of contact, being greeted, being made to feel welcome, being made to feel special. Everyone seems to be upbeat. And I mean, I know a lot of things go on inside of these walls that, you know, there's a lot happening.
We're far from perfect. Yeah.
But you just, it's a good impression. It's a good feeling that I have when I come here. So, and I think some of that is because of, it's predominantly women.
It is for sure. I would even say most of the males here kind of lean towards the feminine side or whatever. So I think it's more softer for sure. And that's the whole premise of Colonel House, softer voice, right? Mm-hmm. So a softer, more positive voice. That's kind of our thing. Yeah. So at the end of these, we usually try to do a little quick fire. Lex and I will jump in and do a little quick fire with you.
Oh, okay, so it's not over yet.
No.
We're almost done. We'll probably have another couple of minutes. And that's
okay,
it.
All right.
For anybody that's stuck around this long, this is where it gets good.
Okay, I'm ready.
You ready? What's your favorite place to dine in Kelowna?
Oh, the El Dorado.
Wow, it's beautiful.
I just love looking out the window or having dinner on the terrace, and it's one of my favorite vantage points because I swim in that area all the time. So it's a treat for me.
Favorite meal there?
Favorite meal?
Yeah. Is there something you like to eat?
We can't talk about this because of my dietary whatever, but I'm, things that I eat are like greens, yams, bit of chicken or fish, but that's pretty much my staple. So just vegetables and greens and
Yeah,
that's
so you pretty much control the food that you put into your body.
I definitely do.
Yeah, and I did that too, and that's how I lost 40 pounds. Is that, you know, like the sugar in the wheat is obviously one of the worst things that we've been. Yeah. Cereal. Like, cereal. I thought cereal was a good thing.
It was hard for me though, but from being a triathlete for so long, like I was a carb junkie for a long time. That's the only way that I could fuel my body, but it's much easier now just to stick with.
Do you wine?
Occasionally. I'm like a featherweight type of drinker.
Yeah, I'm a featherweight too. So.
Are you?
Is there a favorite? Alexa knows more about wine. Alexa actually educated me on wine because I was just like, because you go to these things and they're just like, I don't know how to hold a glass. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm not much of a, I don't drink much anyway. But the only, and most of the wine tastes like gasoline.
He hands out wine.
Gasoline?
No, he hands out wine that's like a white wine warm. And I'm like, no, we can't serve this.
So Cab Sav is kind of.
Merlot. Yeah. I like a few of the whites, you know, but I'm not a huge wine connoisseur. If it's a really hot summer's day, my husband likes to drink beer, so he'll pour me a half a glass of beer and sit out and catch up on the day.
So anything you want to share or any questions you have for me or Alexa?
I have one more question.
Yeah,
where do you shop in Kelowna?
Oh.
Yeah.
Or do you shop
a lot of online, or do you go to Vancouver?
I do shop online, but I am I love vintage, and so when I get to Vancouver, my son takes me to a couple of the vintage thrift stores, and I love the thrifting experience. Yeah. He actually taught me, you know, what the thrifting world is all about because it was the only way he could survive in Vancouver. But I have bought the most amazing things in Kelowna in thrift stores over retail stores. Yeah. But I mean, if I went to New York or, you know, Toronto, I mean, I would definitely be doing the retail scene. But I kind of shop wherever I can. We're both small, right?
Yeah.
Find a small size that fits. So.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I like thrifting as well.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
It's kind of funny because I know when I grew up, thrifting or secondhand stores that we would call them, that was like kind of like, you don't do that, right?
I don't do that.
But we would shop like at Zellers or something where Alexa would never shop at Zellers, but she would thrift, right?
Yeah. So it's kind of like different. My husband will say if I buy anything for him, he'll go, like don't. He said, there's a smell to that. And I said, you need to do is wash it. Right? Yeah. You can end up with some great stuff.
I think guys have more phobias over for sure.
Yeah, maybe. It could be a guy thing.
Anything you'd like to ask? Or you got another question, Alexa?
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, gosh, she's making me nervous.
I make people nervous.
You're intimidating.
Scary face I have.
You know what? I thank you for sharing. That's great. Aww. It was a great story.
Yeah.
And okay. We thank you for sharing. No, I thought it was awesome.
I can't get over the swimming. Like, yeah. I'm out of breath thinking of one, two. Like, I actually would drown.
It's my...
14 hours.
That's crazy.
It's my... I don't know how to describe therapy. It. It's like it's challenging. But
I think it's a confidence builder for a lot of people. Like, if you can do that, you can do a lot of things. It's the fear thing, right? So, and I think for a lot of people, finding something in life that scares you and then beating it fuels you. Like Eric shared his story that we were talking. Like Eric's was his Red Bull challenge. And when Eric said, Eric Tremonde, who spoke at Level Up, the HR one, he said for him, life was kind of like he's a, like on the dean's list to get kicked out, not on the good dean's list, on the vacation list.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what he was going to do. And then they did that Red Bull challenge from London to Berlin. You had to get there and they gave you 24 cans of Red Bull.
Right.
And that's all you could trade. You had to trade Red Bull to get there. Teams of three, and they said it was kind of a disaster in the beginning, but they finally kind of went to the edge, you know, the edge of the cliff, and then found their way. And he said from then on, he just, like, it was just confidence, right? Yeah. So I think for a lot of people, find something that can build confidence and use it as your center point and push from there. I think fitness is obviously your center point too,
definitely.
Right? So,
yeah.
So awesome. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
It just when you were speaking there, I think what I encounter in my business and in life in general is that we all have things that we're dealing with, stressors, anxieties, things that we want to keep inside that we're afraid to share with other people because we might get judged. Mm-hmm. And I think, and we say when we talk about mental health, it's a conversation that we should continue to have, and we should definitely have that. But I find sometimes it's the simplest thing. It's sitting down with someone, being caring and being genuine and letting them know, like, just give them a hand or a hand up. And that can really make the difference between somebody's day. If you smile at somebody or you acknowledge them for a minute or you do some act of kindness that you don't have to share with the rest of the world. I just think that's how we should be living.
Yeah, and you should never look for the reward. And I would say, I know I'm typically hold doors for people and stuff like that. And we were going to A&W one morning for breakfast and held the door open for an elderly couple to go in and then, you know, let them go ahead and to order and stuff. And then we're standing in line, me and Nikki, and then the guy says, I'll cover theirs too. And I'm like, no. He said, I insist. There's not a lot of people that still hold doors. Not that you're expecting that, but I'm just saying those random acts of kindness go a long ways, right?
Like, they absolutely
taking us like a coffee if you're in Starbucks and somebody's outside, you know, you're just giving them a coffee. You know what I mean? Like different things like that. I think those go a long way to helping people. So I love that. I love that, you know, those random acts of kindness. And I think if more people did that, just one thing, and then it'll influence more people to do more things. Mm-hmm. That's all.
I think so.
Again, thank you.
Thank you both.
Bye now.
Thank you too. Bye now.
Bye now.
If you'd like to be part of this podcast, we'd love to share your story and your road to now.